You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. Okay, let's do some quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. That's obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. To reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. Here's the thing. Information is power. Information is money. Literally, the currency of today's world of entrepreneurship is information. And if you could bring all of the information about your business into one dashboard, this is incredibly valuable. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of the truth about your business. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, access from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all of your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. This is so valuable. You just hit a button and you can see all the information about your business instead of having to like call five different departments and get all these emails and put it all together and make sense of it. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James. netsuite.com/James.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
So I'm doing this series based on the techniques in my book, Skip the Line. I've taken on a bunch of people who, using those techniques, I will help make them a millionaire within 6 to 12 months, or at least on the path where they could see the light at the end of the tunnel. This is the first episode with a new person that I'm helping, Paulo, and he's got some interesting ideas that I've thought about before, and he's actually done it. Basically, he wrote some software to help people get more social media followers, but there's a specific challenge in it, and we discussed that challenge. But then, you know, over this meeting and the next meeting, we look at some even bigger ideas that could make him $1 million even faster. So here he is. You know what? Why don't you explain? We're recording this, so I'm you know, recording for posterity, but perhaps for release. I love how you combined interests to make something that was monetizable. I want to hear more about your process, and I'm going to ask you questions about it. But then I want to figure out how to really monetize what you're doing, and then think about ways of scaling and think about other spokes. You know, I have that spoke and wheel chapter, but maybe tell me a little about yourself first.
Yeah, so I'm from Italy. Originally, I'm from like a tiny village in the mountains of northern Italy, like literally 600 people, so tiny place. But so I was born and raised there. I've always been really into kind of school and science. So I did my bachelor's and master's in physics in Italy. And then I moved to the UK and I did my PhD at Oxford.
In physics?
Yeah, quantum physics.
Wow. So, I mean, Oxford's like the best school in the world, pretty much. Like, how do you think you got into Oxford?
You know, that's an interesting story. Actually, when I was finishing my master's, I really knew I wanted to do a PhD. And so I tried to apply to a bunch of different schools. But when I was talking with some of my professors back in Italy, you know, they were not really recommending a lot that I go to and try to apply to many places. They would just say, oh, apply to one or two and that's it. But it didn't like sound very like the optimal solution to me. So what I did actually, and this was thanks to the advice of one of my relatives, at some point he was a professor in a university in the US. He told me, you know, apply to as many as you possibly can. And that's actually what I did. I just applied to a whole bunch of different schools. And one of the ones that I got accepted was Oxford. And, you know, it was a pretty good school to go to. So I said, yeah, that sounds like the right thing to do.
But again, it's hard to get into though. Like, what do you think set you apart that you got into Oxford?
Oh, well, I'd say I was pretty good at the university. Like my master's, I did very well. So
what was your master's on?
So it was theoretical physics. So I've always studied physics. My bachelor's was in physics. My master's was theoretical physics. And then the PhD was, technically my PhD was in atomic and laser physics. So it was always a combination of theoretical and kind of computational physics. I think, in general, the idea is that there are so many problems in physics that are so hard to solve. And, you know, it's impossible to solve them analytically. Like, you cannot just write an equation and solve it, right?
You have to see it in practice.
Yes. So there are kind of two ways. One is build the experiment. Sometimes you can do it, sometimes you cannot. It could be too expensive. The problem you're trying to solve could be, outside of the capability of current experiments. So what you can do is kind of simulation. So you're trying to simulate the system with a computer. And some things you can do, some things you can't, but it's a kind of big field where kind of I did most of my work and where I actually started doing a lot of like coding and thinking of doing everything through coding, basically.
So when I think of quantum physics, I think of, obviously it's the physics of things that are so small, they can't really be studied in a practical way. Like they're like particles that appear and disappear. According to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, you can't really even determine their location and their rotation both at the same time because it's almost random. How did you get practical studies in the area of quantum physics?
Yeah, you know, I think that although quantum physics is so like detached from our common experience, it's still very, very based in practice. All these statements that are made in quantum physics, everything is testable. Unless you go to like strange realms that of, you know, I don't know, string theory and stuff like that, then that becomes a bit harder to test. But most of, quantum physics, everything is proved, there's experiments for every single statement and prediction that is made. So it's not really that far removed from reality.
So let's say I want to prove that a particle, a theorized particle like the graviton exists. Do we know that gravity could be particleized the way, you know, light is both a wave and a photon and, you know, other forces are both waves and particles? Like, how would I prove that the graviton exists?
Yeah, you know, that's outside of my expertise. I think that, you know, especially like linking gravity and like quantum mechanics seems to be one of the big problems currently, right? So it's not that easy. But let's suppose if we were to talk about something like much simpler, let's say measure the, you know, we can pretend to go back in time and come up with a problem that is easier to implement now, right? That if we go back 100 years, they wouldn't know how to do, but now it's commonly known. Let's say you want to look at the position of an atom. You know, you can make an experiment that tells you the position of the atom. Like, for example, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. Yeah, that's true. It's, if you know the speed, then you don't know the position. But I think a lot of the time, some of these quantum mechanics concepts are described in a way that is almost sensational. Whereas you can still measure the position of a particle. there's going to be constraints on knowing its speed, but you can still know many other things.
You know, it's fascinating that you say that, by the way, because I think that happens in every area of science, because that's how you get funding. So
yeah.
You call something the uncertainty principle, and it's or chaos theory, and it sounds like, oh my God, chaos theory. I got to know more about that. That's why that book, Chaos, yes, by James Lake, was a huge bestseller. And
I always think about something chaotic, like as an example, you know, chaos, who knows what it is? Like there's some definition in physics, like in Lagrangian mechanics, that is a system is chaotic if when you change its starting position. Let's say you're trying to see like how a ball is moving when you throw it. Okay, that's not chaotic. But if it were chaotic, it means that if instead of throwing it from this position, I throw it from this tiny different position, then you cannot predict what's going to happen. Because the evolution, it's so dependent on the initial position in such a random way that if you change it a little bit, you won't know what's going to happen.
Right. And so putting the name chaos to that as opposed to we've got to find, you know, a form of statistics. Like there's no statistical probability curve that could match a particular system. Putting in statistical terms would not be interesting. Calling it chaos theory is interesting. Just like in computer science, artificial intelligence is just a small sub-branch of statistics, really. It's all statistics. Neural networks and pattern matching is all statistically done. But let's call it artificial intelligence, and eventually computers are going to be smarter than us, just like in the movies. Then it gets a lot of funding from the Department of Defense. Or biology, let's call it like cloning instead of editing DNA and RNA, and you know, we're using this one gene, the Cas whatever gene. Now we're calling it cloning. It's more fascinating. It's more likely to get the popular interest. But the reason I ask all this is because it's very interesting. Everyone always says ideas are a dime a dozen. Execution is everything. And I like how, I wouldn't say you're disdainful, but it seems like you're down on string theory, which is a fascinating theory, but there's zero way to test any of it. It's just a fascinating mathematical possibility, but there's no way to prove it. And you like practical stuff, even in these esoteric sciences. And the same thing works for entrepreneurship. As you know, you can have, first, you need to be really good at getting ideas, which it sounds like you're good at, but then you need to figure out also good ways to execute. Not just execute, but good ways to execute. Like there's a spectrum of execution from bad to good, because you have execution ideas are a subset of ideas. And it sounds like with physics, because there's time involved and money involved, particularly when measuring like the position of an atom, you have to be very careful how you design your experiments.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I tend to be in everything very practical, right? It's great to philosophize about this theory and that other theory, but you know, then if you cannot test it, if you cannot get something out of it, it's just thinking. And you know, it's great. Thinking is great, right? You know, nothing wrong with it. But I feel when you have a goal that you want to achieve, and it needs to be achieved in practice. You know, I think there's this great quote: "You cannot plow a field in your head."
Yeah.
Right. You need to go to the field and do it.
And I have a less impressive quote, which I always tell people: you can't think your way to success. Like you can't think your way to finding your passion. Like you can say, I would like to, you know, be a race car driver, for instance, but until I actually do it, I won't really know if I truly like it. Oh, I would like to be an astrophysicist. That's great. Take a class in physics, then tell me if you like it or not. And so on. So you can't think your way to success. Only action is what really, action gets you data in your life. That's why I call it the 10,000 experiment rule. You can't read from a book how to be a great golf player. You have to do experiments. You have to get on the golf course and try things like try a stroke, try this club, try to putt, do experiments. This is a simple example because these experiments have been done for several hundred years. But whenever you're learning a new field, you learn it fastest by doing experiments, which it sounds like that's a part of physics. So you're a natural person for this. Okay, so you obviously have an interest in physics. What did you do after you got your PhD? Why didn't you be a professor?
Well, I got a little bit tired of academia. And I thought, you know, kind of like you said, need to find ways to get funding. There's a lot of, let's just say it wasn't something that I wanted to keep doing.
But I would think after investing so much time and mental energy into studying physics, it would be hard to just give up on it and do what you're, you know, do something new.
Well, you know, not really, in the sense that, you know, most of the time I spend studying physics, but a lot of the skills are transferable, right? So what I did mostly was theoretical physics, but also computational physics. So I become pretty good at, you know, coding, building models, and all of that can be transferred to other fields fairly easily. So instead of, you know, modeling the position of an atom, you can just model the position of something else in a completely different field. So for me, I didn't have, you know, of course I liked physics. I really liked the kind of concept of, you know, making predictions and predictions that are testable, right?
Yeah, let's say if you were to try to figure out, I'm just going to combine two phrases. Let's say you were to try to figure out the physics of the stock market. What would that mean to you?
Oh, well, I think that it's also kind of some sort of a big field, like a combination of physics and that. And also, I happen to be working for a bank now.
Good, because a lot of banks hire physicists for this very reason. You got to...
Yeah, that's kind of the idea, I think. You know, and also why it was a good transition for me. It was because a lot of the skills were transferable in the end you always want to make a prediction of something. Like it could be the price of a stock. It could be who's going to buy this instrument, who's not going to buy it, right? And in the end, it's always a prediction. There's also a bunch of different, physics models that are can be mapped one-to-one to finance models.
Right, because let's say you're a cosmologist and you're looking at space through a huge, like the Hubble telescope or whatever, you have to be able to break down the picture of what you see through all the light years of space and pattern match it. Is this normal? Or did a second ago something unusual happen 100 million light years away that might have been an interaction with a black hole or a supernova or whatever? You have to be able to identify things with pattern matching. And the same thing in the stock market. It's not quite definable by a normal curve in statistics when you're predicting stock prices, but it's not quite chaotic either. It's a little bit of both. And I imagine you can use physics models to build models of the stock market that most of the time work, sometimes don't.
I mean, that would be the goal. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of quantitative trading seems to be done, like at Renaissance Technologies, which is a big hedge fund. There's a lot of physicists work there. They don't hire any finance people. They only hire PhDs in like math or physics. But so then you got interested in food.
Yeah. So the transition was a bit strange for this. No. So I'm Italian. So I meant to like food. And I've always liked food in general and cooking. And then, you know, here's a kind of where a lot of different passions came together. During the last lockdown, you know, I was a bit bored. What am I going to do? And I got a little bit more into cooking. Then I thought I also like photography a lot. So I just like taking photos. And I said, okay, let's put those two together. Okay, food photography. But I mean, who doesn't have an Instagram for food, right?
Right. And I think initially, like let's call it 8 years ago, people who are really good at photography and interested in food were able to combine those two interests. And people would buy their photos of food because they would sponsor their Instagram pages. They got a lot of followers because people love good photographs of good food. But now that's probably like a tired area.
Yes, yes, totally. There's so many people that want to do that. And actually what I realized by doing it is that strangely enough, like the quality of the photos don't matter that much.
That's interesting.
Yes.
What does matter?
So what I've seen is this. I feel that, for example, the photos that I was taking were pretty good. You know, not professional photographer level, but were good. You know, they were not like taking with a phone. I would put effort into it. You know, the food looked good, but they didn't get any sort of traction. And it kind of felt strange at the beginning. But then I also thought, you know, if the quality of the photo mattered, then you know, you take professional food photographers, like people that actually do it as a job for restaurants, they would have the largest accounts, but they don't, right? What I've realized that really matters is the kind of social part of these social networks. is the interaction with people. Because in the end, what happens? People follow a lot of other different people with food accounts, right? And you really want to interact with them. You want to that when they post a picture, you immediately go to their post and write a comment, right? And like it. And why do you do that? You know, you interact with them with kind of the hope that when you post your own picture, they're going to do it. They're going to comment and like yours. So that's kind of the standard reciprocity.
Yeah. No, so right? that's the first principle in Robert Cialdini's book, Influence.
Yeah. And I felt that it made a lot of sense. And I saw it really had an effect because also, you know, Instagram has their own algorithm on how they promote different pictures. So, and apparently it seems to be very mysterious, but what seems to be working is that, of course, if you get a lot of likes and comments on your post, it's going to get promoted more, and the more people are going to see it. The more people are going to see it, the more likes you're going to get, and your account is going to grow.
And particularly if it happens fast. So yes. If people comment quickly, then that rises up on, and same thing with TikTok, that rises up on the Instagram algorithm. So then it gives more of a chance for a lot of people to like it. So there's food, photography, Instagram. What happened next?
Yeah, so basically, having kind of realized that the interaction and writing comments was such a an important part, I kind of said, okay, let's try doing it for a little bit, right? So I would spend I think I did it for 1 or 2 days because then I was fed up with it. But, you know, I spent a few, an hour or two writing comments, right? And you see someone posting a picture of a pizza, and what are you going to write? Oh, this pizza looks so good. I like pepperoni. Who knows? Like someone posts a picture of an ice cream. Oh, I like ice cream. You know, this ice cream looks so good. But, you know, you can easily realize that after a little bit, it becomes very boring, right? But that's how you get people to see your posts, right? Or see your account, because you post on their picture, they're going to get the notification, they go see the notification, they see, you know, let's say my account 4 times, and they say, oh, why is this person commenting on 4 of my pictures? I'll check him out. So they go to my page. If they like it, maybe they'll follow it, maybe they won't, but at least they see it, right? So I did that for a little bit, and, you know, That's not the thing for me. I'm sure, you know, if someone really enjoys the process, maybe it's the right thing to do. But for me, you know, I would find it very boring. So I kind of thought, is there any way to automate this? Right. And then I kind of, that's where kind of my coding passion came in. And I tried to add this to the, you know, photography, food and coding. And so I went through my first idea was, okay, can I automate the system 100%, right? I tried to see if there were any sort of products that, let's say, I could buy that would completely automate this. So basically going through Instagram, going through other people's posts, liking it and commenting only when it's related to food, okay? But I couldn't really find anything. So there's a bunch of smaller products or like Chrome extensions, but they do something, maybe they would just like pictures, mm-hmm. right? But if you just like pictures at random, it's not very effective. And second, there's a big problem, which is Instagram doesn't like automation, right? Because of course, I mean, rightfully so, otherwise you could have, bots spamming yeah. everything.
Right.
So it's some sort of arms race between people trying to figure out a way to build a bot that would work and Instagram trying to, crack down on it. So what I managed to do was to build some sort of kind of bot that I can even use right now. And what it does is that it goes through as many pictures of food as I tell them to. Okay, so basically I can give it, let's say, 50 hashtags that have to do with food, right? It could be, pizza, Italian food, food in London, right? And it would sort of go through as if you were searching the hashtag on the Instagram app. It would get all the posts and then go through each one, like it, look at the picture, figure out what type of food is there and write a comment that is related to the food.
So you would figure out what the picture, what food is in the picture by pattern matching, like by some sort of
These are way to do it. It's just by looking at the kind of caption and the hashtags that are used. Usually that's information enough to be able to tell what food it is. And then that writes, the bot writes a good comment. Because another kind of important part to it is writing an original comment. Mm-hmm. Because if you imagine someone like commenting on your pictures, but it's always like a single emoji or beautiful or something like this, it really comes off as very low effort, that they wrote the comment just because they had to, but they didn't really care. So what I've actually done was preparing a large database of a lot of comments so that, for example, for any food, who knows, a T-bone steak, I would have 30 different comments that could say, oh, I like this type of steak on Saturdays. And but something very specific.
You came up with the comments, right?
That was a big part of developing all of this.
I wonder if you take all the hashtags and would generate comments on the fly. So let's say someone had a T-bone steak in Chicago. And they and those are the hashtags, T-bone steak Chicago, and you looked it up on Google. Let me see if it just comes up. I mean, it's hard to know which things are just advertising a steak and which are, like here's one. One of the first things that comes up is the T-bone has always been a favorite steak lovers, not only for having a size that will satisfy any appetite, but also having two different cuts all in one steak. And let me see where it brings in Chicago. I guess it's just the company is Chicago Barbecue Guys. So I don't know. I was just trying to think of a way to automate on the fly. Very original. Here's one. I can't believe, that's a fake steak. Here's one from the Chicago Tribune, how to cook steak. Yeah, I guess it's hard to generate, automate on the fly using Google.
So on the fly, it's a bit of a problem. I actually thought about it and did something that would do that. So the two ways I've been, let's say, generating these comments is on the one hand, I've taken literally scraped Instagram comments. So for example, I would search for pictures with a T-bone steak and see what comments people would write on it. Right. So if they write a comment under a T-bone steak, it's going to be something T-bone steak related. Then I would actually filter for a comment that mentions T-bone steak. So I'm 100% sure it has to do with T-bone steak, and then just use that. So that would work all the time. Another strategy I've applied, and this is a bit more complicated, but I basically trained a text generation model to write food comments.
Wow. So how did you do that? That sounds like one of these. What's that AI program that takes text and figures out the next, writes the next sentence?
I was using exactly that. So the idea is that you can train a model to learn how to, complete text. That's it. The idea is kind of complete text. But since I trained it on a database of, a huge amount of food comments, it will be able to actually make an original food comment. The problem with this is that the model is very large, and to train it you need a big GPU, and it's hard to do it on in real time. At least with the resources I'm currently using.
But can you do it so that let's say anytime you see, I don't know, is there a way you can have it always running in the background with every new set of hashtags you see on Instagram? So like, now we just saw T-bone steak Chicago for the first time. We'll make a comment from our original database, which is not as automated, but then now we'll have it figure out 1,000 more comments using, this generator. And then you just keep that in a database.
Yes, this would be possible. Yeah.
So what's an example of the second thing where you use the text generator to come up with a comment?
What do you mean?
Like, have you used the AI version to the text generator to come up with comments?
Oh, yeah.
So, like, what's an example?
Yeah, so, for example, this is some very simple comments, but the input of the model was just saying calamari. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then a few of example is I'm loving these calamaris with some emoji, or I'm a little obsessed with calamari. This is like calamari heaven.
I like that
and one. Stuff like that, right? So they're let's say somewhat simple, yet they're almost indistinguishable from something that would be completely original.
Can you send me an Instagram link where it was used?
I don't think I can do that. So you know why? Simply because when this runs in the background, I don't know where it writes the comments. It just writes it to.
So because I'm curious, does the engagement with your comment increase because they're slightly more than beautiful or just an emoji?
Yes. That's what I've totally noticed. Because people take them as original comments, right? They you see these comments and they're good enough that someone that reads them think, oh, the person who's written this has taken, 10 seconds of their time to think about it and not just write a heart emoji.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you have to know, when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
Why weren't the best food photographs getting the most engagement? That was a disconnect that you wanted to basically experiment with. Like, you could have a theory about why that's happening, but you still need to experiment to find out if that's what's happening. You borrowed that from your hours in physics. You borrowed those hours to experiment in this completely different domain, which is why aren't people commenting on famous photographers' food photographs? And then, of course, there's the idea sex part of it, which is you combine food and photography and, computer coding. And even with AI, you're using the text generator. I also like the fact that you sort of realize, again, it's better to be the only than the best. So how can you be unique? Well, one way to be unique is to engage the social network a lot more than other photographers. And again, you were able to experiment and manually and see that was true, and then automate. I always think people should do manually what they can before wasting time automating, because you just need to know if it works before you put in the hundreds of hours to automate something, and you need to know what the nuances are and so on. So you did that, your experiments were successful, and then you executed. And then what's the results?
Yeah. So, well, from a, let's say, product kind of point of view, what I realized was that, you know, there was a very clear reason why there's no already bot that you can buy that would automate this. It's because I feel it almost cannot exist. It's because Instagram is so against this idea of bots. My code would work, let's say, automatically for a month, and then it would stop working. And I would get, my account would get blocked.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, let me tell you, the numbers of times I've been blocked is insane.
Because, well, I wonder if they're blocking it because they feel the comments are automated, or if you're doing like 1,000 a second, they might realize
that. No. It's thought through, because, I could see that at my peak level would be being able to maybe like 500 pictures in a day and comment on maybe 300 to 400. Okay, and even this is done at kind of randomized time intervals. The comments are all different because I have this huge database. But still, you know, I think there are small things that can be done that Instagram can do to realize it, right? So, for example, I'm running everything from a laptop, right? Actually, you know, it's not only is it run from a laptop, it's run from a Firefox browser. That's because that's how I managed to automate things. But, you know, who's going to use a Firefox browser to use on their laptop to use Instagram? Everyone does it on their iPhone, right? So I think there are telltale signs that they can get.
Are there ways to spoof IP addresses and browsers? And not that we're trying to do something unethical, but it's an interesting experiment. Are there ways to...
Oh, yeah. You can do that. You can spoof the... pretend to be a different browser. You can pretend to come from a different IP address. You can use proxies. But it seems like it's really a big kind of, you know, trying a new trick until you get caught, right? And then when you get caught, you have to come up with a new trick. And of course, there's part of it is the fun of it. But what I've realized is that this would be a very hard product to support. Because imagine I was able to, let's say, sell someone this program that does all the commenting for themselves. And but then, you know, in a week, Instagram changes their algorithm or their systems to catch bots, and it no longer works. You know, I don't know for sure I can fix it. Maybe I can. Maybe it's going to take a week, right? What are you going to do with the client in that week of time that it doesn't work when you're meant to provide a service? And then I would never, you never really know to what extent Instagram can go to kind of, you know, block bots, for example, or block any sort of automation. So I kind of felt, you know, it's a good tool. It's a tool that I currently use myself, but it needs so much tinkering on my part that it seems something hard to turn into a good product for a customer. That's why I kind of took this idea and repackaged it in something that I think can be turned into a product.
Tell me.
And so what I did, my idea was this, right? So I just said, this is extremely hard to automate. So how can we make the process of writing comments as easy as possible, but not automated? So what I've started to work on is basically a keyboard, an iOS keyboard app. But what this keyboard would do is that it has loaded already all of the database of comments for each food. So the way it works now is that I can go to Instagram, see a picture of pizza, and then I would just write on my keyboard pizza. And as soon as I write pizza, I get, you know, 30 comments that I could write. A list of 30 comments, I just tap on one and it gets pasted in the comment section.
So what you're going for here is simply speed. You could search for pizza, find 20 different popular Instagram accounts that have a pizza picture on them, and within a minute or two, as opposed to 20 minutes, get 20 decent comments that get better engagement and will build your followers. So it's semi-automated.
It's semi-automated, but hang on. So what my app does is actually giving comments for you to write on other people's posts.
Right. And then you click on the comment and it's instantly posted.
Exactly. And it's instantly posted. So, and this makes up for the fact that if you want to comment on other people's picture actively, it takes a long time. And it takes even longer if you want the comments to be somewhat original, right? Because you'd have to find the picture, then you have to go to comment, think about it, right? Think about the comment.
Yeah.
What am I going to write that it's, you know, one full sentence that actually makes sense and you just have to add it. And
so it takes 5 seconds maybe.
Yeah, even more, I think. Because if you think about it, you type it, and with this, I kind of saw that basically with my app, I can cut the time down to maybe 15% of what it would take otherwise.
So you've experimented using it with the app and not using it with the app.
Yeah.
And you see the difference in time. So I'm wondering what the automated version does. It maybe you could, now that you know how many seconds it takes manually with your app, and that seems to be okay with Instagram, can you add that time increment to your automated version?
I could, but from my experiments, the timing is not the issue. I could add even, you know, longer waiting times, and every so often I would get caught. They're using more detailed information to try to say whether someone is a bot or not, not just the time.
And so, because the way you're doing it now really is manually, it's just as if you're, some program is providing solutions and it allows, I mean, you know, ideas to you, but you're still manually doing it and they can't tell that it's just a click, a point and click. You're still manually doing it yourself anyway.
Yes. So because of that, it's completely genuine, right? From Instagram's point of view, when they look at someone using the app, they are actually writing many, many more comments, but, you know, nothing is automated. It's just as if, you know, the idea is automated, right, of the comment.
Is the comment pasted into the Instagram comment section? I wonder if you go letter by letter, if that would be even better. Maybe that is what they're looking at too.
I suppose that could be an option, but from my experience, I've never had any issues when using it from the app.
I see. So right now this approach works. You haven't been blocked using this approach.
No.
And what's been the results?
The results is that you save a lot of time.
But I mean, have you increased your Instagram followers?
Yeah. So it clearly helped out a lot. The engagement goes up significantly, even if, because of course a lot of it depends on how many how much you post, how good your posts are, but writing comments and liking other people's picture is the best way to get let's say discovered by other people, because when you if I comment on four of someone's pictures in a row, they're going to see the notification. They're going to see it in the, in their notifications that someone has interacted with them, and that causes some sort of curiosity. Of course, this happens mostly with, if you interact with people that don't have, a lot of followers, because of course, someone who has hundreds of thousands are not going to care. But if it's someone who has a relatively small account with a few thousand followers and you and they see people commenting on it, they kind of, they're more curious, right? And that's, and it just gets the kind of discovering process much easier.
It's interesting because sometimes if I make a good comment, let's say someone has 1 million followers, and if I make a good, and I get a notification, they just posted, and I go right away and I comment and I make a very intelligent comment. Sometimes that works because the comment will have like 1,000 likes. And so the people liking my comment might go to my Instagram and I get engagement from that. So at that level, at the high level, it's more important to have a comment that really stands out as providing value, just as much value as the post or more. But you're right. If I want to get the person who posted to interact, it's much better to go when they don't have as many followers, but maybe they're growing quickly. So you're kind of you're buying low and selling high sort of.
Yeah. I think when it comes
to, that would be interesting. Like, what the best Instagram accounts that are trending upwards very quickly. Mm-hmm. Like the second derivative is still positive. Then, as opposed to other accounts, then it might be worthwhile to focus on commenting on those as well.
Oh yeah, this would make a lot of sense. Yeah,
I mean, which account are you trying to grow? Can you show me the account you're trying to grow?
Oh yeah, sure.
While you're doing that, I'll tell you that when I first started writing, I realized engagement was the key. So if someone commented on an article I wrote, and this was like in 2003, I would actually call them on the phone and say, thanks for your comment. You know, happy to answer any other questions. And that was a really good way for me to build initial followers back in 2003. Mm-hmm. And then when Twitter was out, I started having Twitter Q&As. So that would increase my engagement a lot. And I got a lot of Twitter followers that way. And in all my articles, I would say, follow me on Twitter. So giving a direct kind of instruction to follow me on Twitter usually helped. But now I'm kind of, everything's so sophisticated, I'm kind of at a loss to, wow, this is beautiful photos. I love this.
I mean, it's all right.
So Tasting Tones, I'm going to follow this. London food blogger. Oh, I can't follow it on my desktop. But anyway, these are good photographs. And you have 11,000 followers. How long did it take to get the 11,000 followers once you realized the true technique?
A few months. especially lately, I've not been putting in much effort simply because I got more interested in developing the app than in growing the account.
You know, another thing is, let's say you're not posting as much, you can always find the most interesting posts from other Instagrammers and post it and say, Instagram food clip, food photo of the day from this account. So you could kind of reward your followers and reward also the good best food Instagrammers by reposting and giving them credit, but reposting their photos. And that could be automated too.
Oh yeah, you know, that's actually something that I thought about. Strange enough, it's particularly difficult to automate.
I wonder why that is.
Simply because I've looked into this quite a bit. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's hard to just upload photos automatically.
Yeah, you know, even sharing a photo to your Instagram, mm-hmm. it's impossible to do with an Instagram, but there are apps to do it. So I wonder if any of those apps have an API you could interact with. You know, like ReShare is an app, and there's a bunch of different sharing apps where you don't have to download it and upload it. You just reshare mm-hmm. it, but you have to use an app for it. You can't use Instagram. And so I wonder if any of those have an API you could build into your thing. So meme influencers, people who post the best memes every day, mm-hmm. and they're just aggregators, but they're curators. Those do very well. Like Tank Sinatra, his account posts funny memes, but it's from other people, and he gives credit, and he's built up to millions of followers doing that. If you could app that, that's good too. So now it seems like there's horizontal ways to go and vertical ways to grow. So what I mean is, like, let's think of a vertical way to grow. If you could give someone an app or a program that randomizes IP addresses, browsers, time increments of posting, and various other factors, so domain independent of Instagram or Facebook or blogging sites or whatever, giving basically the infrastructure of fooling, you know, getting past the bot finders, I think that's an interesting app by itself, domain independent. You know, commenting on TikTok, Instagram, you know, medium.com, LinkedIn.com, you know, whether it's articles or a photo site or a video site, YouTube, but creating the infrastructure for, again, randomizing the browser, randomizing the geolocation, randomizing the time, randomizing, you know, how the comments are done and so on. I think that's interesting too. You know, that's kind of vertical where it's mm-hmm. sort of like how Amazon took their infrastructure of creating a store and opened up the Amazon Sellers program so anyone could create a store. So that's like a vertical expansion. And then they took mm-hmm. that infrastructure and made, you know, AWS to offer their entire infrastructure store independent to anybody for anything. And so this is where you kind of broaden out. So it's not just about commenting on Instagram. It could be about doing X on Y. But the whole purpose is fooling all the techniques that you've learned from fooling the bot finders. So I wonder if that's hard to do.
Thinking about it, it would seem a bit complicated, mainly because you'd want it to be kind of platform independent, right? And
you can build it for several platforms. Like maybe you can have a menu like, here's 50 sites we can do this with. Do you want to do this with comments, with emojis, with, you know, and so it could be just two menus. So you build it kind of for all these different things, like, and you have to do APIs into all these different things. Mm-hmm. But the main infrastructure doesn't really change that much. It's just you're constantly adding new sites and new functionality. But the basic structure of spoofing all these different heuristics of how to find a bot is accomplished.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. Yeah.
So that could be interesting, but that's interesting only to programmers. It's not like a huge marketplace. We're interested for interesting for people building bots because they're all the bots are probably getting caught all the time. And so as to your experience, and you're very smart, so I would trust your experience over some random. I get emails all the time from, you know, spam mails. Hey, we'll increase your account by 10,000 followers, you know, with our bot, you know, thing. But then I'm sure they die real quickly because they don't have your experience and so on. And then the other way, of course, is horizontally. So you do it for food, but you could do it for fashion. You could do it for self-help. You could do it for finance. You could do it for jokes. So that's an easier one to do. and filling out the comments and the other stuff you could kind of outsource to, you know, using Fiverr to, you know, Indian or Malaysia or whatever, where it's much cheaper for somebody. Hey, here's the fashion category. Look at 1,000 sites, kind of give me comments for each type of fashion related tag. And so you get the comments and fill up the database using, you know, outsourcing it for less than $100. And now you could extend, you know, horizontally to different categories.
So yeah, this is actually kind of what I had in mind of the direction to go, because it would seem, you know, like you said, much simpler and also much easier to kind of, like I said, I could outsource part of it, and it would also clearly increase the amount of people that could be interested in it.
Right. And meanwhile, I still think there must be ways, like if you're doing it manually, how come software can't mimic exactly what you're doing manually? Like there's
That's true. That's true. But you've done tried manually, there must be a way.
Yeah, but you've tried you know what you're doing manually. And so there must be some missing link that you're not able to do with the browser. And that's why I think, well, you're cutting and pasting. So I thought maybe it would be not cutting and pasting, but letter by letter. But there must be, while you're doing either the vertically or the horizontally, there must be some way to keep playing with and experimenting with something that, you know, for a much longer time beats the bot finders. And, but there's another thing too. You mentioned, and also coming up with the automated, I'm very interested in the automating the comments almost in real time using kind of the AI text generator. What AI do you use? What program do you use?
Well, there's this model called GPT-2.
Oh yeah, GPT-3.
So that's the thing. GPT-3 is apparently is supposed to be much better, but I don't have access to it. So I need to use the previous version.
When I was looking at GPT-2, I couldn't get access to it. Is there an API into GPT-2 now?
Yeah, that can be easily used. Yeah.
So I have another idea that's sort of related. Here's my dream. And it's different completely than what you're doing, but you would have the skill set to do it. Again, it overlaps with various of your interests. I want to have a podcast with myself. So I want to load in. Let's say I've done 800 podcasts. Jay would know. Jay's on here. Jay would know. Maybe I've done 900 by now or 1,000. But what if I load in all 900 of my podcasts and maybe my books as well? And now I crunch that all through. I want to have a podcast where I'm interviewing the AI version of myself. And
I actually believe this is somewhat possible. And I have done something similar in spirit. Okay. And so what I did is that I took one of my favorite books. I don't know if you've read it. It's called Shantaram.
Yeah. I've read that. It's a great book.
I basically trained the model, okay, to learn to write as if it was from the book, okay?
Yeah.
And then I would give it some sort of prompt and would fill it out. To me, it was indistinguishable. If I was told that that passage was from the book, I would have not been able to tell.
Let's say I wanted to have a podcast with the main character of Shantaram, you know, about his experiences in India and so on. Would I be able to, and it's based on the author's life, Gregory Roberts, would I be able to do that interview? Or let's say Einstein had written an autobiography. I forget whether he has or not. Would I be able to take all his letters and autobiography and stuff and load that in and interview him, like interview historical characters?
Yeah, I think that is possible. I think I read of people working on this specific problem using GPT-3.
I bet you could even be done with GPT-2, because I was thinking of it with GPT-2 when I saw some examples. That seems like an interesting app too, that for instance, a lot of podcasters would use. It would be interesting for novelty at first, but I bet you a lot of podcasters, if they want to learn, like let's say I want to learn about Abraham Lincoln, but I don't feel like reading a book. Okay, James Altucher he's loaded in all of Abraham Lincoln's books, and I like the way James Altucher interviews people, so I'm going to listen to James Altucher's podcast with Abraham Lincoln, AI version of Abraham Lincoln. I could see there being a market for that among podcasters, and the subscription rates could be pretty high. Like I would pay, you know, $1,000, maybe even $2,000 a month for something like that. And there's 2 million podcasters. Maybe many of them would be willing to. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm looking for content and I can't get Barack Obama to come on my podcast, I could just turn on the Abraham Lincoln thing and in the middle of the night, yeah, do a podcast with him and load it the next day. You know, so I'm basically curating who I'm interested in, and I'm able to interview based on our own words and language and ideas. And then people could judge for themselves. Maybe it's even an interesting thing. Judge from 0 to 10, whether this felt like an interview with Abraham Lincoln. I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud, but I'm just trying to think of other spokes for this, for your skills and the technology that you're interested in working on. So that's one potential spoke. Another one, you know, and these are more GPT-2 or 3 related, which is like writing speeches or whatever, or writing books. Like maybe I can load in all my podcasts and have it generate a book that I need to edit, the 1,001 things I learned from my podcast. And so it could figure out how to learn what I've learned. So maybe I've commented, that sounds fascinating, whenever I've learned something. So it could take out of, because I can't even remember. I would love that for myself. I can't even remember. I've learned so many things. I mean, I've interviewed so many incredible people. I wish I could remember everything I've learned from them. So it'd even be useful for me, let alone it could be publishable as a book. And then, like I said, I think it'd be interesting to identify the up and coming, let's say food influencers on Instagram before they're up and coming. So you kind of see how they're accelerating versus other accounts, which they probably don't even know. And then not only make a curator, you know, make your account part curation, like, oh, food photo of the day or food photo of the week. So this increases your number of posts, but it also alerts them that you've awarded them the food poster of the food photo of the week. But people always come back to the source. Oh, I want to see what the food photo of the day is at Tasting Tone's Instagram account, because maybe I'll start following that other person too. But they always go back to the source, just like people always go back to Google to find out more or to see what the latest things are. So I wonder if you can also, you know, as part of your tool set for Instagram mastery, do something that identifies the fastest trending accounts and is able to automatically post what they're posting. And then even make a comment, hey, you were selected as the food photo of the day on the Tasting Tone site. So you post that on their accounts, and then other commenters or people who like it see your comment and come back to your account because you're the expert curator. And again, some of these meme accounts have millions of followers and they just are curators. So a big problem on all social media is that there's no curation. And by identifying the fastest trending accounts, and again, this is something that they might not even know they're one of the fastest trending accounts, you're able to curate in a very interesting way that nobody else can do. And it could only be automated. You can't, it's very hard probably to manually find the fastest trending accounts. And so those are some ideas, but I think this is great. It's just a matter now of listing all the ideas and figuring out which ones, and there should be multiple, but which ones you want to explore. And it involves some skill learning. Like you might need to learn more about GPT-2. I could probably find you access to GPT-3, you know, and then getting understanding maybe different skills, like how to identify, you know, which are trending accounts, or how to identify, you know, you can even optimize the language of the comments and see which words do better than other words. So I don't know, there's a lot of different experiments we can do here to really make your product or products great and worthy of spending money on.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Meet Gail. Her thing is being a supermom. And supermom has a lot on her super-sized plate.
Ain't that the truth?
But at Walmart Pharmacy, supermom recently got her whole family updated on all their vaccines.
We knocked it out during a grocery run. No appointment.
That's next-level supermom. From pneumonia to shingles, HPV, and more, get no-cost vaccinations from an expert pharmacist where you already shop. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart. $0 copay with most insurances. State age and health restrictions may apply.
Cheers to a great day and this ice-cold Corona.
You know what would make this day even better? My grandma's carne asada.
Throw in some music.
We can watch the game. Or we could keep it simple.
Corona, la vida más fina. Get your Corona at ordercorona.com. Relax responsibly. Corona Extra Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
So what do you want to do? Because I'm happy to work with you on any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. I think what you have is like the core of something great, and your ideas are great. And I think, and you know, I don't like the manually as much, even though it saves 15% of time. And even though, by the way, this is an approach that I've looked into myself manually and it works. I definitely increase my Instagram followers if I actively manually comment on popular Instagrammers. Yep. So I've done it on popular Instagrammers, but I then think out like a real complicated and interesting response to their accounts. And I don't do it anymore. But the few weeks where I experimented with this, I gained like 1,000 followers. And, I like the idea of automating and also finding even more interesting accounts that are more likely to be successful for the growth of your account. And I also like the idea of curation. And I also like the idea of expanding it out horizontally, if not vertically. And I like the idea of somehow using this for podcasts as well. But there might be other domains.
Yeah. So actually for that, I could even try, I mean, this is just for fun, but try to train one of these models on like one of your books and have it fill out something to see if you can see if it, I think from my experience using like Shantaram, for example, like the writing was amazing.
Yeah.
Right. And this was even a subpar model. was not even a very good model, like because it was like a smaller version of this GPT-2, whereas my understanding now is that GPT-3 would be like orders of magnitude better in generalization, how good it would be. But I could do it just for fun. Actually, what I did, I have another Instagram account that was just my personal Instagram account. And for a while, I was just posting my pictures just for fun. And I tried adding captions written in the style of Shantaram.
And what happened?
I only got comments of people saying, oh, you write so beautifully. I said, I didn't write anything.
That is really interesting. So you can test which books work better than others. That's fascinating.
Yeah. So I tried with a bunch of different books. So I trained it on some Jane Austen stuff. But then just for fun, I started, because the way this model works is that you need to give it some prompt and then it's going to fill out. Okay. But the prompt was something, I went to the store and bought a burger. And I suppose Jane Austen didn't know what a burger was back then. Yeah. And so the completion was a bit weird, simply because, you know, it's like she was time traveling.
Right. It's an older style too of writing. So people may not relate to it as much. Whereas Shantaram is still like a very modern style.
And it was great. You know, I could maybe I can find an example and send it to you.
Yeah. Send it to me. And then also be interesting to compare Shantaram with what if you load it in the Bible, which has been focus grouped as the best-selling book for the past 2,000 years. We know that people relate to it, billions of people. I wonder if that would work better or worse than Shantaram. So it'd be interesting to kind of compare 100 different books and see which one was the best for getting engagement, you know, statistically significantly above the rest.
Sure.
That's another direction to go. So it's almost like the next step is, you know how I do like the 10 ideas a day? It seems like every day for a week, come up with 10 ideas of how you could use maybe, you know, just different ideas. Maybe one day is different GPT ideas for captions. Mm. Maybe another day is different, and all these are experiments, but different ways. How would you do curation using the technology you've already built? How would you expand horizontally? What are the different ways you could expand horizontally? See, these are all different like idea lists or what other things haven't you tried for fooling the bot finders? Because I think that's interesting software all of its own. But I think all of these things could lead to monetizable pieces of software. And again, the purpose is not necessarily fooling the bot finders, but also being able to, like you say, the best photos don't get engagement. The goal really is to get good photos to have engagement and beat beat the algorithm, which sort of chooses who to follow. The best should be the ones to follow. And that's what you're trying to get out there. So not considering yet whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, because let's say I wanted to load in all 800 of my podcasts and all of my books. That's an idea. It might be a bad idea because it might take a year for the GPT-3 to learn it, but that's an idea. Or expanding vertically so that you are bot finding, or you're bot proof. Like, you know, you've learned to spoof everything. You figured it out. Like, what are the 10 things you haven't tried? So that might be a bad idea. Maybe there's not a big enough market, or maybe it's not that interesting, but it's still an idea. And it might help when the whole idea of coming up with lots of ideas, is not only to practice and exercise the idea muscle, but everything that you think about kind of joins forces together to help you come up with the next set of ideas and ultimately to finding the good ideas. So even the bad ideas kind of, they all talk to each other. All the ideas talk to each other, the bad ideas and the good ideas for your next list of ideas. And so you have just more fuel. You have a bigger repertoire of ideas when you're making the next list of ideas is one way to think about it. It's like a chess player who knows lots of different ways of openings in the game. When he learns a new opening, he's able to apply the ideas from even the bad openings to the new opening. And it's interesting. But let me see something else.
So for me, I think that kind of the thing that inspired me the most. So, well, there's the GPT-3 thing with the podcast. That sounds very interesting as a general idea, but more specified to what I've been working on so far would be
By the way, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Please.
I'm thinking even more now. Like, it's not just, let's say I load in all my podcasts and my books. There's a common cliche, which is that, people say, oh, I always give good advice, but I don't follow it. And what if I'm having a problem and I want to follow my advice? I turn on my bot and I ask it, like, well, what would you do in this situation? And I get a comment back from the AI version of me. It might get me thinking, okay, this is what I would say. I should really live by my advice and follow it. Or let's say I want to get advice from, Albert Einstein or Abraham Lincoln or Tony Robbins or whoever is your, or the Bible, or Shantaram. You can ask it a problem. Oh, I'm having trouble paying my taxes this year. What should I do? And just see the response, might be interesting. Or you get the book, The Five Love Languages, which is about relationships. Oh, I'm having this problem with my loved one. And it comes back from, maybe you could put a bunch of texts about relationships in there and it's good. So, or you can even put cookbooks. Oh, I want to make something with fish, but I want to use steak tartar sauce.
That I actually tried.
Yeah.
I tried getting a model to come up with recipes. The results were mixed.
Yeah. I mean, are you sure did you cook any of them?
Oh, no.
So there might be experiments there. Another
yeah,
thing,
yeah, yeah, definitely.
You know what would be interesting is also experimenting. Well, no, okay, never mind. But I think you should brainstorm and come up with lots of ideas, all sorts of ideas. But you were about to say what your interest was.
Yeah. So because I kind of feel that from the work I've been doing so far, the part of it that I could most directly turn into a product was actually this the app part, and since I think I've done a bunch of work on it, I would like to try to go all the way and turn it into a product.
I think that's a good idea because you're almost ready to go. You're talking about the iOS keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I have a couple of questions about that for you because let's say the whole development coming up with it was almost the exciting part. But now the idea of turning this into a potential business is almost the part that kind of scares me a little bit, mm-hmm. right? Because simply it's something I've never done before. And so, for example, I would have to publish the app on the App Store. I wouldn't want to do it in my name. I would have to start a company mm-hmm. simply because, you know, I think it would be good for legal purposes. You never know what may happen. And that's, for example, a thing I suppose it wouldn't be problematic, but it's something that they would have to do.
Yeah, so it's interesting because your app has a lot of functionality already. Like, for instance, you wrote me in your original letter to me, you said you wrote code that could scrape all restaurants on Deliveroo, delivering to your place, find their Instagram account, and message them asking to collaborate and send you food to review. And you said you had around 30% success rate. So so basically you were mentioning you could get food every day for more than 1 year. So I think if you kind of add different types of functionality, like someone might want it to increase their Instagram account. Another person might want to mm-hmm. do it to get free food every day.
Yeah.
Another person might want it to create a curated thing. So I think that's another way to grow is adding features. And because you want to make this app, basically people don't buy apps that they like. People are most likely to buy apps they cannot do without. So mm-hmm. Uber is a great example. When you're in New York City or London and it's raining outside and it's, you know, a holiday and it's raining and it's 6 p.m. so everyone's going somewhere, it's probably hard to find a taxi cab. So you mm-hmm. can't not get Uber in London or New York City for that reason. I can't not have Uber in New York City. There's sort of like the not part of the equation is very important as opposed to like, oh, this would be great. I don't care about what would be great. I care about the things I can't do without. And so you want to make this so good that like I could survive without the app as it is right now because I could find comments. I mean, I could find Instagram accounts. I could write comments. And you know what? Yes, it takes me 5 times as long as if I was using your app. But I'm going to manually write such a great, I know that this approach works, that your app automates. I know I can write such great comments that I will get 6 times as much engagement doing it myself than even doing it semi-automated with your app. So it's sort of like you have to increase the value so it could beat a human completely, like leave a human in the dust. Mm-hmm. And so you do that with features, you do that with making suggestions for how one should structure their Instagram account. And I mentioned that curating is one idea, but there could be other ideas. You could scrape all of the web. You could scrape the rest. You could scrape like what you did with Deliveroo. Like here's their photos of the food I ate this month. And this was the best, you know, this was the food I ordered the most. And it's a great photo of it. I don't know how you do it, but so you kind of want to add features that make this so much better than everything else. That it's the only one of its kind. And it's great if, you hit more verticals like fashion, food, self-help, memes, you know, sports. So I totally would like to help you do this. And I do think this could be a multi-million dollars very quickly. By the way, I don't even think, you know, we're saying this in a recorded way, but I don't even think anyone can compete with you. You're so far ahead of the game and, you know, you have access to all these things and all this knowledge and you've been doing all these experiments, even stuff we haven't spoken about, but stuff I see in your email to me. And I think there's a couple of things. One is figuring out how to monetize it. One is figuring out, the ways in which you want to expand it to make it the only as opposed to better. Like right now, it's a better version of me doing this. But it should be there should be some things that I can't do it without this. So that's important. And turning it into a business, that's something where maybe you feel your skill set is not there, but that is something I could totally help with. I could see a million different ways to market this, monetize this, and create different spokes around it that will be very interesting and even get you press and newsworthiness and so on. But I think the first step is figuring out what the complete product is. And I would just, if you want to continue doing this, let's let's brainstorm, you know, let's talk next week and like a week from today, perhaps, and maybe just come up with idea lists each day of features that you would add to, you know, and I encourage at least half the ideas or 2/3 of the ideas or 90% of the ideas to be bad ideas. It's just having ideas is the important part. And then we can narrow in on what the final product is.
Yeah, that sounds good. Do you feel it would be better to have something like more specific, but that can be turned into something like a product sooner, or to have something maybe more complete, but it would take longer?
Sooner and longer. I think you want to get your foot in the door as the guy, and then you keep adding feature after feature
adding
after feature.
Features.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like just getting out there. And then if it doesn't sell, that's an experiment. And we could then analyze the data from the experiment and see, oh, people felt it really wasn't worth it to them, or they didn't want to risk their account being blocked, or, you know, we can analyze what's happening. That's why I think brainstorming first, like ideas you could add quickly. And the other thing is, you know, this is a product, but it also could be a service. So for instance, someone could say to you, hey man, can you double my TikTok followers? Or can you, you know, a company contact you, could you make our company's account have more engagement? And you could do this using your app, but doing it manually. And that way you get, you could do it for them, for instance. And that could, as a service business, that could get you more testimonials very quickly that you could put in the app store when it becomes a fully fledged app. So I would think
this is actually something I thought about, because what I've done also, I've developed a Chrome extension that does the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. So, and the difference is that, you know, if you're writing it yourself on the phone, you can only write so much. But if my thinking was, okay, if I were to offer this as a service, I could get, let's say, restaurants that want to, you know, get more discovered by more people, right? So how can they do it? Just write in the comments. But instead, I wouldn't want to do it myself, of course. But what if I could hire someone, like you said, in India, Malaysia, or whatever, to just do the typing for me, and I can give them the Chrome extension. So it's going to be very easy to do it from Chrome. This is going to be much, much quicker.
Right. And then I would add to that, I don't know if it's in the extension, but I would add to that the spoofing a geolocation, because they probably look for IP addresses in India to see.
Oh, yeah.
What are the bots? But I'm trying to think. So definitely taking what you have and just making that as a business, that's acceptable. But I wouldn't something doesn't feel exactly, this is not a hole in one, because it's not like I can't do it myself yet.
Yes, so that is true.
One thing I would suggest is, maybe this could be one of the idealists, who are some people I can approach right now and do this for them, even for free, just so you can get testimonials? Maybe a local restaurant, maybe me, maybe, you know, someone else, like just even people, you know, like go down your Facebook list, see who's in business.
Yep.
If someone's got a laundromat and that you could do it for laundromat related, it could be a laundromat influencer. Mm-hmm. You could say, hey, let me just take over your Instagram account. I've got this product. I'm going to do it on your account for a month. You see if you like it and do it for free. And so I would think of some people you could approach and just do it, because you'll get much more experience at doing it for other people than for yourself, because there's more at stake.
I also have, like, you know, because of this food account, I do know people with relatively, like, even larger accounts than me that I could easily go and talk about it.
Yeah, and then I would just start brainstorming on other features, and we discussed a bunch of them here, and Jay will send you the transcript of this audio so you could see all the things we talked about. But I also like the idea, you never know where this is useful, being able to identify the small but trending fast accounts. Like maybe they already have 5,000 followers, but you could clearly see that they're on their way to a million, because those are the ones, you know, that might be the most attractive to kind of, comment on or curate from or whatever. And I would just play around with the idea of, is there any way to curate? Like, do any of these reshare products have APIs that you can easily build off of? But And again, doing it as a service, almost like you're an ad agency, like a social media agency, I would try to do it as a service for restaurants or food product companies or whatever. Like, think of who you can approach, like at least 10 people you could approach or more, but at least 10 that you could approach to see if you could do it for them as a service, even for free, because later on you could charge. Yep. You know, if it works well, you have testimonials and suddenly you have a business that you could do manually. And while you're doing it manually, you can continue the work of automating it. And suddenly you're a valuable company if you can automate it. If you can automate a service that's already been successful and you're making money from. So I really think the next step is to come up with ideas on all the ways you could horizontally grow, including new features, new sectors, and so on. And then another thing on who can you do this for completely manually? You know, using you would use your app, but they wouldn't have to. And so this way you could learn what the needs of customers are a little better. Maybe again, you could stick to the food category, but I would also try someone in another category because that will help you learn how to build this for other categories. For instance, for someone like me, if I were to give you a list of Instagram accounts I follow, could you do the same thing from those accounts? Now, it's not product oriented like food is. Food is pizza or steak or dessert or whatever. The self-help category is wide ranging, so it presents different challenges. And then I would also just make a list of ideas. You might not do them. Make a list of ideas of things you could do with GPT-3. And some of them could be ideas we discussed here. So how does that sound? Just kind of like you spend a half hour a day or a little bit more brainstorming. And again, each idea will help you with the ultimate business. And then next week, we start to narrow in on what is the releasable product that you could charge for and make money. And side by side with that, I would start to figure out who you can manually do this for. And by manual, I mean you use your product, but they don't use it. You do it as if you're an agency for them. They don't know what's behind the black box. Like you'll do it using your app. And then I would look into also how you can outsource so you can be much bigger. So you can outsource in the fashion category what the best comments are. And you can outsource that through Fiverr.com. Hey, look at every popular account with hashtag fashion in it and, you know, rewrite the comments with the best engagement. So that's the same meaning, but, you know, a different comment. So it's not a copy.
Yep.
What do you think of all that? And I want to make sure I'm adding value. Like if you think I'm not adding value and you simply want to figure out how to take your current app and sell it, I get it. But I don't think right now, like I always like products where I would buy it. And even though I like the service you're providing with this, I don't feel like I need to. I feel like there's more risk than benefit in automating it. In buying it right now, for the reasons we discussed. And so I'm trying to make this so that it's just Loctite, the proof that people actually need that they can't do without this.
No, I totally understand. That makes sense. You brought up a lot of topics that I like never thought about. Of course, I'm sure, you know, I started looking at it from the lens of food. So I kind of, one of the interesting things was that this comes from similar to what we were talking at the very beginning. You know, I only realized the need for this app when I tried to run a good Instagram account myself.
Yes.
If I hadn't done that, I wouldn't even have thought that something like this could be needed. And I really realized that for a lot of these things, unless you're actually, you know, doing the thing yourself, you won't even think of what can be useful.
Right. And so, what I'm saying is, what's great is as soon as someone posts, you're notified, you're given a menu of comments, you comment, done. I love that. But now, like, how can you enhance each thing? Like, how can you enhance the accounts that you're being notified by? How can you enhance the comments? How can you expand to other sectors, you know, which might be even helpful for your food account? So how can you identify, again, the best accounts? And is there, I do feel like there could be a curation model in here as well, Because not every day you post. And it's one thing we know with social media, it's important to be consistent, like every day or yep. twice a day or whatever. And then of course it could be expanded out to other domains like TikTok or YouTube. It might be a little harder because those are videos, but it's interesting. I mean, the same ideas could work with the hashtags and the keywords.
Yep.
But then also writing the captions in a different style could be interesting. Like, what's your native language?
Italian.
Right. So Shantaram, obviously the native language is English, and you've noticed that with the Shantaram captions, you get more engagement. So
yep.
It might be interesting to kind of test other texts to see, and not only will you build the skill of getting familiar with, you know, how these models work with the text generation, but you become an expert in which texts and why are the best for generating captions or comments, or, you know, who knows how they can be used. So,
I do think that caption generating thing was extremely interesting.
You know, here's an interesting thing. This is just a random idea, but this is what I think about. What if you took a book like Shantaram, and Shantaram's like, what, 500 pages, 1,000 pages, a huge book.
Let's say
someone has to read this book for some reason, like, and write a review of it. Or actually, let's say a student has to read this, but they don't want to. They don't want to read 1,000 pages. So could a text generator that's, you know, specifically programmed write a 40-page summary of each chapter, the important themes, the important dialogue, what happens in that chapter? So a student who's essentially cheating, but a lot of students, you know, when I was a kid, we used to have something called Cliff's Notes, which was like a 30-page summary of Jane Austen's books. And I'd read that for the test instead of reading the Jane Austen book. But what you can do is you can do this for 1,000 books or every book that comes out, and you could automatically self-publish these study guides to Amazon. You could have thousands of books published. It doesn't cost any money. And you could you could have thousands of books generating streams of income, some stream of income every month. And, you know, that's an interesting application of some of this. And again,
yeah, I actually think that would be feasible. Like the idea of text summarization is a big topic.
Yeah. And let me see if I can get access to GPT-3. If you could send me a link where you're accessing GPT-2, I could start looking into it. And I'd love to play with the Chrome extension of this. And then I'd love to figure out also how, or maybe pitch me how you could help me with my, let's call it, Instagram account, you know, in a way that's as non-bot as possible, but using your ideas and your software. And I think what I learned here is, again, how you used idea sex and important to be the only rather than the better, and how you combine, you know, how you, I mean, I've thought about apps like this. Probably everyone's thought about apps like this, but you've actually done it. And now we have to think of the different spokes and how to make this into something that's monetizable. And so that's why I'm saying make idea lists every day. Even if you feel you've already got the best idea, just generate more ideas. And then also very important, see if there's anyone, whether it's me or the CEO of a restaurant or that you deliver from, that you order delivery from, or whatever, do this manually for a couple of people. And again, what I mean by manually is you'll use your app, but they won't. You'll just help them.
I mean, that could be done. My only concern for that at the moment would be this. What if I do it for, let's say, a restaurant, and let's say I comment too much and I get them blocked?
Right. So, that's an important.
That would be some sort of concern, right, that I would have, because if I knew, you know, let's say a restaurant, maybe it took them a long time to get to a certain point. They see it as something valuable, right? They don't want to lose their kind of, their account when you're doing it on their behalf.
That's why I would do it in your semi-automated way, which hasn't been blocked yet. And I would even do it a little bit more manually. Like, you see a comment, you paste it in, and then add to it a little, like your own, like, and so be a little slower.
Yes.
And because you know the technique works, So it's okay if you make it even a little better, it'll work better. And and you know, being a service business could generate, you know, a decent income as you're working on automating it, which creates, you know, millions in value. So I would ultimately say this is a fully manual approach, but for you, it'll be even less semi-automated than it currently is.
Yep.
As you're figuring out the nuances, but I would keep experimenting on fake accounts on how to get around the bots.
Yeah, that's it's a bit of a more challenging part, but it's always nice to try.
Or maybe
to
you can take
them.
A restaurant. Maybe you can take a restaurant that really hasn't focused on their Instagram account. They only have like 10 followers, say, or they don't even have an Instagram account. Like, start with one of those.
Sure.
And then I think you should also let's experiment with an account outside the food industry. But not that you're going to do that instantly because you have to build up the data. But just start thinking about that because this will be most useful when you're for many verticals.
Yes, to me, kind of that would have been the next thing in line.
Yeah.
So let's say before talking to you and you bringing up these ideas, my kind of plan of action would have been get the app 100% working, okay, the way it is now. Publish it. Okay, put it on the store, see how it does. And if it does well, then, either extend it, either like create a different app that is for, let's say, fitness, right? But does the same exact thing, or take the app and add, okay, there's food and there's fitness. And then slowly add, different topics so that the kind of the idea of people using it grows larger and larger.
By the way, you could do that as well, and you could then sell the app. There are places you could buy and sell apps. You could sell each niche by itself.
Okay.
I think the first thing is just getting, let's just call it one product for now. Let's just get, there's various ways to improve it, which is extending the, horizontally, get more verticals, adding more features perhaps, like, I keep saying curation, but maybe that's good. Maybe that's not. It's just an idea. Improving the quality of the comments, like every aspect you could probably improve. So that's, and then seeing what part of the infrastructure might be a reliable app or maybe even an open source thing where you can get other people to contribute to making it, to avoiding the bot finders. Again, I would just start coming up with ideas, but some of these ideas should be execution related. Like, how can I get started using this in a real life context? Because you want to do that anyway before you sell it as an app, because you don't want to screw anybody who buys the app. So that's why I challenge you to do it for me in a way that is authentic as possible, but I'm still using, automated help. So I know when accounts are posting, maybe I find accounts that I didn't realize were interesting to follow. And I'm able to edit the comments to have my style as opposed to just using the 100% of the recommended comments.
Yeah. So for example, if you gave me a bunch of, let's say Instagram accounts that were related to what you feel your kind of niche is, then I could try to do some work there and see what I can get.
Okay,
this kind of scraping of accounts and see what, what sort of database I could come up with.
Yeah, let's do that. So Jay and I will put together a list for you. I'm thinking right away of the accounts of everybody who's been on my podcast, for instance, might be sufficient. All right. Yeah. And then let's schedule for perhaps a week from today would be good. All right. And if you have any questions along the way, or you want to show me anything along the way, feel free to email me and Jay, and we'll stay in touch.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Paul. And by the way, this was interesting. We're recording this because I want to release this as a podcast because I think you exemplify the ideal beginning entrepreneur. People could learn a lot from this. And trust me, no one's going to compete with what you're doing. Like this, if they were going to compete, they already would have done it because this idea has been in the air, but just nobody does it.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of true. I was almost surprised when I realized that nobody was doing it.
I mean, I've even thought about this, and my son is a programmer. I spoke to him about it. He thought it was interesting, but just Nobody has done this. And maybe there's a good reason, because it's the bot finders and things like that.
I think this is
a good idea, particularly if you enhance the text generation and if you could even get more close on the bot finding stuff. And then just in general, if you see what customers want, like when you actually, I also like the idea of the free, getting free food every day. Like, I think that's genius. You could think of other verticals to do that in.
Oh yeah, for that, that worked very well, to the extent that I'm not using it anymore, because you know, you can only get so much free food.
But you know what? That's even a separate app, is the get free food app. Boom. That by itself.
Yeah, I mean, the only downside with that you can do it, you need some social proof, right? And the social proof is having a relatively big Instagram account, because you're going to get free food in exchange for, publicity, right? They're not going to give you free food for nothing.
Well, it would be interesting to experiment someone with 100 followers, how much response they get. You got a 30% success rate because you have 11,000 followers. But what if someone had 1,000 followers? Maybe they'll get a 25% success rate. And like you say, there's only so much food they can eat.
Yeah. I mean, that was the good thing about, the automation part, right? Because I could find that there's maybe more than like 1,000 restaurants that just deliver to my place here, right?
Yeah.
So when you automate everything, then it becomes pretty, even if the success rate is low, like who cares?
And again, I would try writing down 10 ideas a day about any of these items that we've spoken about, because that will really grease the wheels and you'll realize things that you haven't thought of before that might be really easy. The key is you want to do things that are really easy so you could launch quickly. I agree with you that launching quickly is the key. And like the idea of experimenting is that you could see which things are easy to do. You know, so you could even make a list of more experiments you could do to find out more data that you, like, what don't you know yet about this app and what it can do or the ecosystem that it's in. So, and what experiments can you do to find out the answers to what you don't know? So, but anyway, this is great. I'm looking forward to the next step on this, and let's talk next Tuesday, but stay in touch if you want.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your help.
Yeah, no, thank you, Paulo. And I'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Okay. Bye. Have a good day. Thank you.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.